Welcome to the Workforce Navigator podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. And today we have a very special guest here with Patty Cuthill. Now, Patty, you are the VP of People and Culture at VerveCloud. And I want to actually ask you when we get into it here, why you're not VP of People. What's the difference between a VP of People and VP of People and Culture? I think that's something we want to unpack a little bit here. But you've got a great background. You started in the Navy. You actually do a lot of nonprofit work. You said the immediate past president of SHRM in San Diego, and you're on the regional board of SHRM in California. So you're active, and you always stay active. Part of that energy we want to tap in here today, but what I'd love to do is just ask you before we get started, maybe round out your experience a little bit for us and explain a little bit more about who Patty is before we get started.
Steve, I'm very honored to be a guest on your podcast, and I'm really excited about today. And I think, starting out in my career, I would say, like most people would, that it was a crooked path to get here. And I had to kiss a lot of HR frogs before I found my right spot and found my great company that I'm at today. But I've had a very crooked pathway as I started out in the United States Navy. And I'm actually originally from Casper, Wyoming, a real small little town in Wyoming on a ranch. And I just knew that I wanted to get out and see the world. And so the Navy was my pathway to do that. And it was a great experience. I served for about 8 years. I started out as a torpedoman's mate. So in weapons, I have a marksman, which most people don't know, probably not anymore. And I cross-rated to intelligence. And that's when I really started enjoying the work I was doing for our country. And there's a sense of pride in the United States Navy that you never feel again in your work, or at least I didn't. But it was a time that I learned a lot, made a lot of mistakes, and I'm really glad that I catapulted my career starting that way. It taught me how to work hard and to appreciate everything. And so when I got out of the Navy, numbers was always really easy for me, and I always did really well with them. And so I thought my career will be in accounting. So I took the pathway to accounting and started out with that. And I got into a couple companies in, and I started having a little bit more responsibility in the people side of it. They didn't really have HR. It was a real small tech company from San Diego, with a lot of small companies. And they didn't have anyone in that position. Didn't really know a lot about it, but I started practicing and doing some of the things that we had to do from a business perspective. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I really love this. I'm starting to fall in love with this side of the business and how fulfilled I am when I can work with people to make the work environment and the culture great and going in and working with them. So I took a right turn. I was the director of HR and finance. And when I left that company, I made a career change and went right into HR. And I haven't looked back since. I love, love, love what I do. I really like startups because I like building people, building teams, building companies. And I like the fast pace and the risk that is involved in it. And it's a lot of fun. I like to always be busy and always move fast. That's a little bit about my career. And throughout that, as you mentioned, I always have served on a nonprofit board. I always felt like my parents instilled in me to give back to our community. And so I've served on the San Diego Food Bank Board, Head Start, Resounding Joy. One was with the military where they did music for therapy, for PTSD. So I had a heart for that. And so I've always enjoyed that piece of it. And I always looked at like work was something I did to make a living. And my board work, nonprofit work, was how I was fulfilled. I will say now, in the company I'm in now, in the last couple of companies, I have been fulfilled being in the company like I would if I was on a nonprofit because of the work that I'm doing. So I hope we can get into that because it's very fulfilling what I do with people now.
That's a good segue because I mentioned it at the beginning that your title is VP of People and Culture. What's the difference in your mind? There's obvious differences, but why is it called out? Because that's not necessarily a common title to have.
I would even say that HR is still out there. You hear a lot of CHROs and using human resources and maybe people. I really feel like that people and culture is the best way to describe at least what we're doing here at Verve. We're focusing on the people experience, and then we're architecting a culture where people can thrive, share their gifts, And we're using a model called Truly Human Leadership, which is all about serving others and that servant leadership type model. And so this is why we have culture on it as well. It's not just about the people, but it's really my job and the CEO's job in partnership is to architect the culture. And then the people are the culture who bring it together and bring it alive. But we have that profound responsibility of putting the architect together so that they can thrive in this environment.
Well, that makes sense to me. What it said is that there's very much a focus on culture. Because there's a lot of folks that are in HR and people management, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're thinking about culture. And so what I wanted to do is I wanted to say, what then is the role of people in culture? And why is it important that you have such a focus on it for the business?
Sure. So I think that one of the things you hear most common about HR is compliance. A lot of times when people think about how was that HR department or how was that HR person, I saw them when I got hired, I saw them when I got fired. And I will say that is not, if you talk to anyone in my profession, they would probably say that is so very wrong. So I think it's a perception because for a very long time, that's how the profession was treated. That's how we were shaped into working. And even when I was younger, I didn't see it that way. I saw it completely different. But it is a traditional way of looking at human resources. And the people who practice it, though, would disagree with you. Our job is not just to see you when you come in, which is a very important part of it, which we'll get into. But it is really about the experience you have. And we are really partners with our leadership in creating that great experience, developing leaders, developing the architect that's really going to nurture the culture, because culture is alive. It's a live, moving organism. It's always changing. You're always having to nurture it. You're always having to look at it. It doesn't mean that there's significant changes because your values really keep you grounded, but you always have to look at culture as always needing tending. It needs to be nurtured. And you need to be aware of things. I think where some companies, you would have a role where they want you to focus on risk management and compliance. That is not at all my role here. My partnership with my CEO, Derek Geetson, who is an amazing servant leader, he sees people first as well. We have a belief that if you take care of your people, they will take care of your company. And so we start with the people. We don't end with the people.
I love that. And that focus culture can lots of times be something like a mission statement, value statements, culture. It's on the wall. It's on a site page on the website, but nobody really pays attention to it. It's just like we have to have those things. So we did that, but nobody embodies it. But you're extraordinarily intentional. And I just have to ask the question, why? In your opinion, why do companies need to be so intentional about building and maintaining and cultivating their cultures?
A couple things come to mind, Steve. I think that there's always a default culture. So culture is always going to exist, no matter if you tend to it or you don't tend to it. So I think the proactive approach that we're taking is we really want to architect a place where people want to come in every day. They know what they do matters. They feel fulfilled in what they do. They have an opportunity to share their gifts and talents with the work that they're doing, which is part of fulfillment because purpose, of course, they have to have that purpose. We look at people, purpose, and performance as our key things, and people's always the first thing. But culture is always going to exist. It doesn't matter if there's someone here to attempt to architect it, there's always a default culture. So we are more proactive and we want to create that place. We have a responsibility as a leader. It's a privilege to be a leader. And we have people in our span of care that we have a responsibility to create a place where they can come in and they can feel free. We have employees 40 hours a week, more than your church, more than your community, and more than your family. So what are we doing with this awesome responsibility? Where is the opportunity for me? The opportunity is the time we get to touch lives from the time they come through our doors and to the time they leave. And they are, we call them our alumni. So they're going on. And my hope is we are able to grow them and nurture and create that more value that they can share with the world and the rest of the places that they go and work. And so that's an infinite game, as Simon Sinek says, versus the final game is we want to create that. So they will go and it just keeps paying it forward. So that's the awesome responsibility that we have with people. And caring is the most important part about that. So that's why we tend to, it's more than just a job to us. It's a calling. It's a purpose. It's something profound that could change the world and the way people work.
It's a pretty big goal. It's a pretty big mission there. I'm going to ask you an interesting question, okay? If I were to take your cultivated culture and say you no longer had it, you have to go back to the culture just being defined on the fly. There's no leadership. There's no thought put into it. It's just there because it is what it is. How would that be different than where you are today? How would that impact you, the people, the business?
You're describing, I've been here at Verve. We started out as Next Level. We've had a couple acquisitions. But when I first started with Derek, our CEO, there were no values when we came in. So you're talking about where we started from. That's many times what our people operators walk into and leaders walk into, is there isn't. No one has really defined it or structured it. And so what we started with is our values. Values are the foundational, fundamental thing that you need to create. If you don't have something that tells you what your beliefs are, what the kind of behaviors you expect people to uphold while they're here, if you do not define it, they will define it for you. So if you're just starting out, there's nothing. We are fundamentally, we started with our values. Once we had our values, we built the behaviors around those values. So we said, this is now what they look like. If they come alive, a lot of people have great values on the wall. We have our values on the wall. We look great. The question is, how do you get from the wall to the heart of your people and the experience that they're feeling in the workplace? And that goes by defining what you want to see, defining what a servant leader looks like, defining how to care for each other. That may sound funny that you have to teach people how to care for each other, but you do. They're going to define it the way they think it should be. And so defining caring, and I don't know, empathetic listening, one of my favorite thought leaders is Bob Chapman. And he talks about empathetic listening. That's the first skill you need to master as a leader. And that is how you start sharing that you care and you build trust. Because there's something about listening to someone. And this doesn't mean you're sitting at your desk working and you're on the phone and they come in. It means you get up from around your desk, you come around, you sit with them and say, how can I help? And just listening, we don't have to do anything but just listen. And that is the very first step to trust and caring.
So I'm just curious, tell me, what are some of the benefits of this culture? So we've talked a lot about what it is and how you structure it and how you have to cultivate it. And it's something that is naturally, there's always a culture there, but you can define as leaders or help at least be stewards of that. What is the benefit? Why do you do it?
So I think that there's a few benefits. The first, I think that you have to have a balance between caring for people and economic value. So if you think about the world, you think about education, I think it's changing a little bit now. But when you go to school and you get your MBA in finance, they don't teach you how to care for people. What they teach you is that how to get work done through, like, people are a function of your success. So management is a manipulation of others to get work done, where leadership is the privilege that you can care for someone and help them learn and grow. So there's a complete difference between managing someone and leading and being in a leadership role, for at least. But if you think about that, we define success in MBA program as money, power, and position. And not enough living truly through how to serve other people and the impact you can have of leadership and caring for them. It is a privilege and responsibility that you have. And I think that that is part of what we're trying to change. And so anyways, when you have a balance of caring for people and creating economic value, because when you care for people, they're going to create that economic value for you. There's so many statistics out there that show that. And so what does that mean for your business? It means your business is going to thrive. Your business is going to be profitable. That means that we are all working towards one common goal, and we have a responsibility to our stakeholders to make sure we have a thriving business, and not only to them, but to us too, because we're not going to have a job if we don't have a profitable business. So when I talk about loving and caring for people, it is a balance with a strong strategy and economic value. You have to have all of those things, but you've got to start with the people first. You can't do it vice versa. And we're kind of taught to do it first this way and then maybe throw this in. But let me just tell you another value to it, setting them free to share and come into a great place to work. I sit in my office and sometimes it makes me emotional think about it, but the way I know that we're doing great is I hear people laughing. I hear people talking when I'm in the kitchen and I'm doing something, or we're putting up decorations, let's just say, this week. I had someone come up and say, Patty, let me help you do this. They do it because they want to do it. They want to serve each other. They care enough to serve each other and take a minute out of their busy time, because we're all busy. So the fact that they'll do that, and just hearing laughter to me, and just, it's a vibe, verb vibe that we have, that it just makes my heart like so full, because in my day when I started, I didn't have that. That's why I'm passionate about it, because I had a job where I started in accounting. Like I said, I had a CFO that we would work till sometimes 9 at night, sometimes weekends. And I would bring my son in and he'd have to sleep on the floor. I was a single mom, and I don't ever want anyone to have to feel like that. I'm not a number. I'm not a function to get your work done. I am a human being that has a heart, has a family, and cares. And I'm going to put the discretionary effort, and I'm going to give you my all. If you care and you show that you care for me, I'm going to do that for you. That's a human need that we have. And so I think my passion comes from seeing people experience that in our culture, that they go home happy. Because when you go home happy every day, you go home to a family. And I think all of us that are of the age that have grown children will tell you that my son, when I ask him about how he looks at work, he'll say, Mom, you worked so hard. You came home late all the time, and he doesn't want to live like that. He doesn't want to have a job like that. And he doesn't want to. And this generation is, they're demanding something different. And I love it, because it should be different. I didn't have the skill to have a work-life balance, but I want all the other generations to be able to do that and come to work here, enjoy what you're doing, and also serve our community and give a great service. And this is better for work, better for business, right? This is the impact we could have. And so I'm really passionate about changing the way people look at work, because there are so many leaders that look at people as a function to get work done instead of someone that they care for. Sorry, I got a little off on that one.
That's okay. And obviously, we see your passion for what you're doing here. And if people feel like they're cared for, you've got their back, they're not overworked, they're happy at work, guess what? They're going to be the most engaged, most productive too. Like, it's a win. We all worked at places where we never even wanted to be there. But we're like, I have to, but I'm going to be here as short a time as I can. That's not the way that you get the best work. And it's not the way that people enjoy what they do. And if we have happy employees, we end up having happy customers. And an experience for the customers is a direct reflection of the people that they're working with. And you recognize that in a huge way. And I think you've already touched on this without saying the words, but you wanted to talk about fulfillment and purpose in work. How is that different than, because I feel huge purpose and fulfillment from you, just to hear you passionately talk. But is that culture, is that doing that for everyone?
Yeah, so I do think that, admittedly, I think when you're in a for-profit company versus a nonprofit, I think it feels a little bit different to find your purpose. And that's why I said where I used to get a lot of my energy from was on the nonprofit world, because I needed to work for a cause, something bigger than myself, But I feel like here at our company, I am working for something bigger than myself. I have found my purpose in the people here. Purpose is very important, but I think people struggle with saying, okay, it's great, say purpose, but what does that mean exactly? I'm a project manager. How do I find purpose in that? Or I'm a tech person. How do I find purpose in it? And I think that with the culture that we build, we really create this one team, one goal feeling where, to me, it's all about sharing your gifts and talents. That's how you're fulfilled. So it goes back, even if you look at burnout, isn't because you're working 8 hours a day. Burnout is because you're working at something you're not being fulfilled at. So you're continually draining things. But purpose is a very important factor in everything. When we interview people, we are looking for that purpose. If we're interviewing for, let's say, a tech position, we'll many times hear them talk about, we'll say, what do you do on your free time? Oh, I put a computer together last weekend in my garage. Like, I know that they're going to have purpose and passion and what they do because they're doing what they love. So it's really identifying what energizes me. What do I do? Because you can be really good at something. Like, I was really good at accounting and numbers, but I was not fulfilled. So you can be really good. So the strengths, if you think of Gallup strengths, that's their thing, is that you find what you're fulfilled through those strengths, because you can be really good at a lot of things, but not everything will fulfill you. So the purpose is, it's hard sometimes, but for us, we define it as just the one team working towards a goal. And our purpose is people. Our purpose is each other here and lifting each other up and caring for each other and sharing our gifts and talents in a way that creates value and profit for our organization to grow and to create better services for our clients. There's a direct relationship with engaged employees and client engagement. So a couple statistics Gallup has, it's about 36% average engagement in companies in the U.S. today. We look at the survey Great Places to Work, and I picked that one in particular because it's based on a trust model and also serving people. And we have been at 90, the first year we did it, we were at 100% engagement. Then we came down to 97. We've been in the 90s for 7 years. So over 92% year after year, people say they love to come to work here. They love the people they work with. They are engaged here. I don't talk about it a lot because that's just the applause of the people, because the people are the ones that create the culture and they're the ones that create that engagement. It's not me. It's not my boss. It's the people that create it. 88% of people in this country feel they work for an organization that does not care for them.
88%?
88%. And this is why I'm so passionate about bringing into the work the importance of caring and empathetic listening. It is such an important part of creating a great place for people to work and for our business to be thriving. We want to be competitive and thriving, and we want our country to be thriving. So this is how we do this at a grassroots effort. But I think about my son, he's of the age now that he's working. And I think about, how is he experiencing work? I ask him all the time. And it makes me so sad when I hear his stories of how he's being treated. And he doesn't want to say anything because he wants his job. Or he had his performance evaluation. He said, Mom, the best thing my boss could tell me is I show up on time. I said, Richard, I said, like, you've got to set the bar high for yourself, and you will find an organization that really does care for you and where you're going to feel you're connected, engaged, and thriving. You just have to find that right place. But there are a lot of people that don't have that. So I think when people come here too, when we go through the recruiting process, they think we're crazy. They don't think they're going to come in here and it's going to be like this for forever. They just think that that was our way of getting you here. And then months afterwards, they talk about it and they're like, it really was like that. It really is. So that's really important to me, that we walk the talk and that we do really show people that we care and we create that environment. And we're continually looking at how do we improve that. And we're asking the people to give us that information through the surveys. How can we be better? What are we not doing? And then I have a cross-functional team from different departments. It's not just my team that does it. It's the actual grassroots effort of employees saying, how can we make our company better?
We've heard so much, and the people that are listening here are like, how do I have what Patty has? How do I get that kind of culture? What do I have to do to be a catalyst to do that? If you had some recommendations for them, what would those recommendations be?
I think we all sit there when we haven't found our sweet spot yet. We think, how can I make a difference? Because sometimes I think it feels very heavy. Like you're only one person in this little department and you may think you're the only one that cares. But I promise you, you're not the only one that cares. There are more people. So I would say that it starts with you. And I think that if you can model what you want to see in other people, the caring, because you don't need approval from the leadership to care for someone. Because I talk about this a lot and they're like, how do we get senior management to buy into it? I'm like, so what you're saying is you want a memo from senior management to say it's okay to care for your coworker. Like you can start tomorrow. You can literally start tomorrow with this. So for people who feel like they're in this big place and they don't really know how much change they can have, I would just say start where you're at and model what you want to see and be your best little in your span of care or control, however you want to look at it. We say span of care. What can you influence to show other people this is how we could be collectively? So that's one way. If you're in a leadership role, I would say that if you haven't already, you need to have courage and you need to take the step. You need to talk to your CEO and you need to just sit down and maybe it's over a cup of coffee or something and just say, I really care about where we're going as an organization. And here's two things I'd like us to start with. If you don't have values, start with the values. But everything starts with one step forward and you can be that change. There's many companies I work for that I didn't have the impact that I have today because I didn't have that support at the higher level to make the changes. But I did have my span of influence and control. I did do that because at least that's what I could do. But I think that here, I feel so blessed and so privileged to be here. And this has been my most favorite assignment because me and the CEO are just so lockstep in the way we see values, the way we see caring, the way we want to impact people. And having that partner is so incredibly important and exponentially makes your impact that much more. And then when we connected, then we started building a leadership team that had the same vision that we did, and our leadership team has been together, all of us, all nine of us, for 6 years.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yes. And sometimes that can be a bad thing, but it's a good thing because we really understand the type of leadership that we want. And so then that permeates downward and we're very close. And I'm just, every day I come in, I'm like, just feel very blessed because you don't know what tomorrow brings. I mean, we could be acquired. A lot of things could happen, but I'm just every day I savor that I get the opportunity and the privilege to architect culture here and see it come alive. That's super exciting. And my hope is that then that just grows and keeps moving and growing. But honestly, as one person, my mom would always say that, tell me I can't do something. I'm going to show you I can. And then if you get frustrated, honestly, move to a place where you can. I know we don't all have that opportunity, but when I picked here, I picked it on purpose. I wanted to be a place where my CEO understood that and we could really do some great work together. That was really important to me. So I think if you have the opportunity, I didn't always in my career have the opportunity to choose the best place. So I understand that can't always be your option, but you should think very thoughtfully the companies you connect with. Because the better you align, the more impact you're going to have on people.
If I were to ask you, because we've covered a lot of territory, if I was going to ask you, like in 30 seconds, what's the one most important thing that you want people to take away from listening to this podcast? What would that be?
I've thought about this a lot because it's a hard thing to do because I do like to talk a lot. I think that it's simple, but it's hard to do. So caring for someone, being an empathetic listener is not always easy, but it's simple to think about you can do. So I don't think you should overcomplicate things. And I think you should always remember the impact that you're having on people. And that person who walks in here, you don't know what kind of day they had. You don't know what's going on in their family. So you have an opportunity to pour into them. You have an opportunity to listen. And sometimes compassionate listening is just listening gives someone relief and we take it for granted. So I would say the biggest skill you need to start with is empathetic listening, because then that will create a leader who is going to care for their team, and it's going to create a better place for people to come in and work. And people are looking for that. We have a lot of tough things in our world right now. And you don't know what's going on in people's family, but if they can come to work and have a place where they feel valued and they know what they do matters and they're not just a number and that people care about them, that's going to make the world a better place, just that. And it'll also make your company better and higher performing as well. It's more simple than we think. And you can start caring tomorrow. You don't need a memo from leadership to tell you. You can start doing that.
Your passion is infectious. I will tell you that right now. People had questions for you. Would it be appropriate that we gave a link out maybe to your LinkedIn profile that people could reach out?
Absolutely. Anyone who knows me knows that I'll jump on a virtual cup of coffee pretty much if you ask, because I've had the privilege of having leaders and people in my life that have done that for me. And Gary Ridge has been one of my mentors, along with Bob Chapman, who I love. And he told me a long time ago, be a door opener. And if I can help, or if I can even give you some tips to get it started, it's my responsibility to do that. And I would love to help in any way, because we're all in this together. We're trying to create a better world for business and conscious capitalism, and where it's not just about the product, but it is about the people. And we are, I think, this leadership transformation right now, where it's a human revolution. We've gone through the Industrial Revolution. I think we have a human revolution to go through now. And that just means we need to learn how to work with each other a little bit differently. And we need to start caring for each other.
That was a little bit more than 30 seconds, but it was good. Patty, I just have to say thank you. Thank you for coming on and sharing and infusing us with all of your passion. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's been my pleasure, Steve. Thank you for allowing me to share my joy. And just, I hope it helps. If it helps one person, it'll make me happy.